Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals. And Lottery West. Celebrate like you've scored a century. Oz Lotto. Get amongst it this Tuesday. Play responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Welcome to Sports Day. Alan Border medal is underway. Who's going to win? 922-11882. Just heard in John Nicholls' news bulletin here on 6PR that Marnus Labuschagne is the winner of the Test Player of the Year. And we've got so much to talk about, so little time. Minwoo Lee winning the Victorian Open. He'll join us tomorrow, I'm glad to say, here on the show. We had the debut of the West Coast Eagles and the start of the season for the Freo Dockers when it comes to AFLW. The Freo Dockers had a win. The West Coast Eagles had a loss. The Glory had a win. Their 26-man squad has been named for the AFC Championship. The Wildcats had a win. So overall, it was a pretty good weekend. Paul Hazelby and I had a win. We played in the same team in the charity match on Friday night, and our bodies are feeling much better. I knew you'd want to know, listeners. How are you, Hayes?
Going well. Still alive, Carl. That's the main thing after the weekend. When you face Mitch Johnson in front of 20,000 there at the Wacker, it's not easy to do. He was bringing the heat, but we got through. He didn't get me out. Did he get you out?
No, he didn't. Get me out either.
You didn't see his deliveries, mind you, though.
He smashed me in the fence. How far were those sixes, you reckon?
It does go to show you the difference between the average punter and the very best. They're just so clean with their hitting. But Tendai Mazungu, very, very clean with a few of his sixes.
Really impressive, Tendai. Mate, obviously we've got the Alan Border medal being conducted, the awards right now. We were hoping to have a chat to a man on the spot over there in Daniel Cherney, but he's not available to us right now. Maybe getting close to the big award of the night, the big gong. Who, in your opinion, wins the big gong tonight, Hayes?
I think Patrick Cummins deserves the award, but I wouldn't be surprised, and this will upset a few people, if David Warner wins the award, given he's been so good across all formats. He was good at the one-day internationals. He made a few centuries in the T20s as well, and he dominated our summer here in Australia against New Zealand at test level. So he could get enough votes. Just going through some of the awards so far, for the men, we'll start there. The one-day international player of the year, Aaron Finch, on the back of his very good World Cup campaign. He is the skipper, and many talk about him being included in these squads. Well, that's why, because he's the number one player in that format. The Bradman Young cricketer was Wes Agar, the Test cricketer Marnus Labuschagne, and the domestic player Sean Marsh. He's dominated at the age of 36. With the women, the ODI Player of the Year, Alyssa Healy. The Young Cricketer of the Year went to Taylor Vlemmick. And the Women's Domestic Cricketer of the Year, Molly Strano, for the most wickets in the domestic competition. In the Hall of Fame, Sharon Treadray and Craig McDermott have just been inducted.
Yeah, good stuff, Hayes. 922-1882 is a number if you'd like to talk about anything out of the weekend of sport. I'll tell you what, Hayes, I went down to the Speedway on Saturday night after we played in that match on Friday night there at the Wacker, and at the Perth Motorplex, I saw a Tassie boy. He's 18 years of age. His name is Jock Goodyear. We'll have a chat to him on Sports Day. His first drive at the Motorplex, 2 weeks out from World Series Sprint Cars, where you travel around the country and compete against the very, very best that this nation has to offer. And there are some American drivers as well who race full-time as professionals in the United States. He got the chocolates in his first drive. He was unbelievable. He's only 18 years of age, and I'll tell you what a future that young man has ahead of him. Beat Jason Kendrick, a bloke we've spoken to a few times here in this program, and another young West Australian by the name of James Inglis finished third after starting out of position 10. But I saw one of the biggest prangs. You can see it on Nine News' Facebook page. Stuart Yates is driving a speed car. I thought he was actually going to go over the fence, Hayes. He was that high. His car was absolutely wrecked. He was taken to hospital. It just shows you what can happen at tremendous speed. And glad to report that he's okay. Brad Blake's also okay after a big T-bone in the late models. So some big accidents there in the weekend. 922-1882. Good to see the Sixers get the chocolates in a rain-shortened BBL final. I was glad to see that they actually got the 12 overs in, Hayes. I know it wasn't 20, but at least they got 12 in it. Josh Phillippe was the star, mate.
They did a very good job, didn't they, the ground staff, because it was threatened that they were looking to move it, and they did have those discussions, but in the end, it wouldn't have been that fair for the Sixers, who earned the right to go through the grand final. Have it played, and I think the ticket sales around 20,000 played a part, but 12 overs was good. Again, the Melbourne Stars, did they choke? I know it's a different team, but they continue to finish inside the finals. That's two in a row they've lost. They just, under the heat, Carl, they do fold a few of those players once that Maxwell got out and Marcus Stoinis. Just one more on the cricket. David Warner has just won the T20 Player of the Year. So we'll wait until we hear the big one, the Alan Border Medal, and also the Belinda Clark Medal as well.
Righto, Franco, let's get into the dig.
The dig. Dial before you dig. The essential first step.
Yeah, Hayes dug himself a massive big hole, and I don't reckon he climbed out of it last Monday. That was around his, in 5 years' time, playing three grand finals, one of them in the United States of America, the first at the MCG, the third here at Optus Stadium. People thought he was mad, he was smoking stuff out of the weekend. Well, is there a dig you'd like to have at someone or something out of the weekend? My dig is going to be at all the naysayers around women's footy, because women's footy is here to stay. And look at the crowds, Hayes. It was a sellout at a new team, St Kilda. They have a sellout. We've got a situation whereby the game on Friday night, Carlton and Richmond, I think it was, had 15,000. There was 5,500 down there at Frio. I know that Michelle Cowan will talk about this a little bit later on, but I've got to have a crack at all the naysayers there. And Champion Data produced some toilet paper for me today, Hayes. Can you explain to our audience exactly how they've come up with the best defensive units in the AFL? Because to me, mate, it makes no sense whatsoever.
So what they've done is their list for 2020, and they've broken it down to individual and looking at the team defenders, the forwards and the midfields within that. And I must admit, some surprising numbers have come out of it. Just looking at the defenders, the West Coast Eagles, do you rate their defence, Carl?
Do I rate their defence? Yes. Well, mate, they had all Australians. If you look at Shepherd was in the squad, McGovern and Hearn both got in the team. So there's a couple. And Jetta's not bad with his boot off half back, is he?
Well, they have been ranked. He's a very good player at number 13. Would you believe? I couldn't believe it when I read that. The North Melbourne midfield at number 2. Now, that's the weakness, I believe, for North Melbourne, is their midfield part of the ground. They're number 2. The GWS Giants, great midfield. They've been ranked at number 12, and then you look at Geelong and their defence, who were number 1 last year with points against. They've been ranked as the 16th best defence. So they continue to throw out these rankings, and I just don't understand how they come up with it. I know it's data-driven, but looking through it, Richmond overall are the number 1 ranked team for 2020. The Western Bulldogs, number 2. So they're the big jumpers. Collingwood, number 3. The Giants are number 4. The Eagles not ranked until number 5. North Melbourne, also the big surprise there at number 6. And no surprises down the bottom. Gold Coast at 18, Carlton at 17. The Fremantle Dockers consistently poor, as ranked by this in all of the areas there at number 16.
Right. Well, for me, Hayes, they've gone absolutely mad. I mean, you look at points against last year. Geelong were by far and away the best defensive unit in the competition. And when you know, think back to the All-Australian selection, there were some players that were rewarded because of that. 1,462 points they conceded. It was 140 points better than the next best in Collingwood, followed by Hawthorn, Richmond, GWS, and West Coast were sixth best. So they reckon that West Coast are going to slide down to 13th as a defensive unit. I just cannot see that happening. Look, I think that from what I've seen so far in and look, we've got very little to gauge on, but what I've seen from defensive outfits and how they operate, there's no doubt that Collingwood's is going to be strong again. If West Coast keep their best players on the park, McGovern, is he going to play round one? I think the way that you and I have seen him move in this past week, that he has certainly got his hand up to be playing in round one. Richmond are certainly going to be about the place, I'd expect much again. And, you know, I really don't see too much changing in the top four or five teams in the competition, to be perfectly honest. So I'm not exactly sure what the criteria is and how they come up with those rankings, but I don't know that that is worth the paper it's written on, to be perfectly honest.
I tend to agree with you on this one, Carl. Now, I'm going to have a dig at the fact that the Perth Sports, the Wildcats, and we've also seen with the Big Bash, forced to delay their start time for TV broadcast. Now, this happened in the Sydney Kings game where it went to overtime, where the Wildcats had a start time and then it was delayed, I think, around 30 minutes, which is just not good enough, I believe, at professional level. I know they want to have the double headers, and the broadcasters are certainly important. But what about all the fans? They go along to a sporting event knowing exactly when it starts, and they want to finish that game at the appropriate time so they can move on and do other things. And then you've got the players that are ready to go, warmed up. There is a danger element to that that puts them at risk from an injury point of view. So I'm not happy with the broadcasting and the delays to our sports here in the West. It wouldn't happen back the other way, Carl.
Oh, the poor things, mate. Look, in the end, they're professionals, and they're not going to ground out their stress levels before a game, are they? Just because they've been delayed 20 minutes? I suppose you warm up with an opportunity to get out there and play. And is there another way in which you can get the game started? There probably is. I mean, the NBL have got a website where they stream the game. So if anyone wants to watch it, you can have it there. Do they have multiple channels on Foxtel so that you can maybe, you know, check out of one and into the other like they do with AFL matches? Because when you've got two AFL matches that cross over, they can generally play those on different channels. I mean, there's ways around it. But from my perspective, the delays we had constantly in Big Bash, they were 15 to 25 minutes at some games here out west, and it's because we broadcast back into the East Coast. I mean, do we just get used to it? Do we put up with it? I reckon we do. I don't think it's such a big deal. But if you think it is, and you agree with Hayes, have your dig. 922-1882 is our number. You can join us after the break. Don't dig yourself into a hole. Lodge a free dial before you dig inquiry. Your call's next. Welcome back to Sports Day. Boost your sales with the Australian-made logo. Paul Marsh from the AFL Players Association joins us, and he's in town. Marshy, welcome, mate. How are you?
I'm well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, what's on the agenda? What have you been rolling out of our local AFL clubs in your fly-in today?
Just got here, actually. So had a quick catch-up with our former president, Matthew Pavlich. Just had a chat and caught up with one of our sponsors, and now just lobbed at the Freo Footy Club. So we've got to catch up with the Freo AFLW team tonight. We've got the men tomorrow down at Freo. We've got West Coast men and women. We're catching up with the respective executive teams. What else? We had an agent forum earlier today, doing a bit of media. So there's plenty going on. We're here for a couple of days.
How much do you listen to Matthew Pavlich? Because he had some ideas last week about shortening the season, potentially down to 18 games. Is that something that you're in favour of? And I think he also wanted to shorten the games, like Patrick Dangerfield has spoken about in the past.
I've always listened to Pav. He used to be my boss, so it's important that you listen to your boss. I think it's a good time to be having these sorts of conversations. I think there's a lot of change going on in the industry at the moment with AFL and AFLW, and a lot of talk about the length of the games, and I think that one is picking up a little bit of momentum. Number of games is a difficult issue because I think most people work on the assumption less games will mean less money for the entire industry. So I think they're good conversations to be having at the moment. We've got to keep moving forward, so you can't assume that's what worked yesterday is going to work tomorrow. So haven't got a fixed position on number of games, but definitely a conversation worth having.
Marsh, I did read last week that the AFL approached you guys in relation to a reduction in list sizes. I know currently it's around 42 to 44. Has that discussion happened? Would you be open to going down towards a number of 35?
We've had some very preliminary conversations with the AFL on this one over the last couple of years. I think what we would say on this is, you know, our view is that our job isn't to have the maximum number of contracts possible. It's to have the right number of contracts. So I think there's a bit of work to be done on, you know, how many players each club are using, what are the clubs that are running. If there becomes a proper second-tier competition in the AFL, then, you know, this sort of discussion, I think, picks up a bit of steam. So, you know, we're not in a position to sort of say we want less or keep it the same. I think it is it's a complex one, but in our view, if it justifies a reduction in the number of contracts, we're certainly open to that.
There have been some discussions about certain individuals, and I won't go into names, in the public domain that you're not happy about. I mean, mental health has been something that the AFL Players Association have done a great job in entertaining people both sides of the fence, whether that's be people in the media, the public and the players and the clubs. Obviously not too happy with things that have been said in more recent times, Marshy.
Yeah, I mean, look, mental health is a very serious and complex issue, and I think some of the rumour and scuttlebutt that's going around is not helpful. I mean, we've got human beings in the middle of these issues that are doing it tough, and I think the focus should be on that rather than as I said, stories that all it does is put pressure on the individuals in the middle. And, you know, as I said, our focus needs to be on supporting those individuals that have shown a lot of courage to put their hands up and identify that they're struggling from a mental health perspective and started to get some help.
Has there been much discussion in relation to the players not being happy with some of the lack of accountability, I guess, in the media with comments that have been said from time to time?
Yeah, I mean, there's been lots of discussion right around the competition on this issue, and it's a tough one, as you know. There is probably a lack of accountability in some quarters. We've certainly taken a strong position at times where we felt journalists have crossed the line, but it's very difficult to do it on every single issue. So, you know, we would like to see more accountability. You know, the issues, and I'm happy to talk about the Jesse Hogan issue of the last week, and the talk that there might have been a tearing up of his contract. Well, the only people that would know that would be Jesse, the player, his agent and the club. And there's been no indication from any of them that this has even been a talking point. So it's disappointing that these types of issues do pick up momentum and all of a sudden everyone's talking about them.
One of the big positives has been the eagerness for all of the AFL players to get involved with the bushfire appeal game, the All-Stars versus the Victorians. In your talks with a lot of those players, do you think this format of the game could be rebuilt?
I think the players have always had a will to play State of Origin. It's problematic for the clubs, and we understand that. There's a huge risk of injury, which will impact, you know, the team, the club, and that's, you know, the primary employer of the club, the player. There's also just trying to fit it in from a scheduling perspective. But, you know, if this game is a success, which we all hope and expect it will be, I'm sure that the conversation will come around again as to whether we should bring State of Origin back. And it's a conversation that we're very happy to have.
Yeah, I've always thought it should never have gone away, Marshy. You know my position. It's been my position since it closed down back in the 90s. It's a shame that we don't have it, to be totally honest. I think it's a reward for those players that play for clubs that don't necessarily get to even play finals in some cases. And it's, you know, I think an acknowledgement if they get selected in a team of that nature. And if we do it for charity, which could easily be done each and every year, I think it's got a worthy background to it to encourage individuals to play too. With the Players Association, and I know that it was a very, very tense negotiation period with the collective bargaining agreement for the women. Are we settled now? Are we heading on the right track? Do you see any issues in the foreseeable future? And what do you think are going to be the main points that are going to be issues for you in the not-too-distant future?
Yeah, I mean, we did a three-year deal for the AFLW players towards the end of last year, so that lines us up with the men's deal and the AFL broadcast rights. So we expect that it's going to be a productive next 3 years. We are doing a review of the AFLW competition with the AFL currently, so I'm sure there'll be some things that come out of that that we'll look to action. But look, I think we're in a good place with our men and our women at the moment as an industry where you know, a lot of certainty around what their benefits and their obligations are, and you know, we'll keep working on this over the next 2 years as we build to the next CBA for both the men and the women. But I think competition started well on the weekend. Hopefully it'll be another successful season with you know, the right teams making the finals and lots of people turning up.
Marshy, do you think we'll see footy played in China this season?
Now, this is a day-to-day proposition at the moment, Hayes. It's obviously, you know, safety of our players is, from our perspective, and I'm very confident the rest of the industry, it's the number one priority. So, you know, we won't compromise that. Things can change. There's still a little bit of time between now and the game in China, but the decision will probably have to be made in the next month or so. And then at that point, you know, we will make it on its safety. So if the virus continues to grow, it'll be difficult. If it starts to slow down, then perhaps it will go ahead. But, yeah, we'll work through that with the AFL.
Thanks for joining us, mate. We know you're busy. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. Paul Marsh here on Sports Day. It's Kia's open season with match-winning deals and Australia's best 7-year warranty right across the range, Hayes.
What do you think, Carl? Matthew Pavlich made some comments last week in regards to potentially reducing the season back to 18 games. If we do get the 19th team that comes in the competition, he reckons that'll open it up for more opportunity for State of Origin. And the list size, there are ongoing discussions right now between the AFL and the Players Association about potentially reducing it down to 35 or 30. Personally, I like it because if you reduce the list size, it means that we're not having clubs that are getting a lot of these young players on their list, because some of them we know are going to take a long time. If you've only got 35 spots, you're going to put 35 players that are ready to go. So from a draft point of view, only two young kids, I would say, every year would get drafted. The rest would then go back onto the waffle list, the VFL and the NEAF and those competitions, which would strengthen it. And if there was injuries occurring in the AFL, they could always go and top up at any time throughout the year from those competitions. Your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I worry about going backwards and forwards and poaching from clubs in lower tier competitions. Whilst the individual player might benefit, I think that those aspiring clubs in lower grades who are trying to do exactly the same thing at that level as what AFL clubs are trying to do, and that's win premierships and appease everyone that's associated at their football clubs.
What if the AFL were to tip in a bit of that money, though? Because if you do reduce the list size, then you're going to have more money.
I don't think it's all about money, though. It's not all about money. Whether it's community footy or country footy or waffle footy, it's not always about the money. Mm. It's actually about getting out there, playing with your mates and winning a premiership. That's what everyone strives to do at the start of the year. It's not always about how much you're putting in your back pocket. So I think that we've got to be really careful in how we do structure that. I don't like poaching backwards and forwards. I'd rather see lists settled at the start. And that's why I've always been one that's advocated for more, not less. I mean, there was 50-odd players when I started at West Coast, and I felt that, you know, for us, that it created more competition. I don't think that at times in the AFL there's enough competition for spots. What irritates me is blokes that get an opportunity when you're throwing a dart at a dartboard. Mm. There's players that have got proven track records that get overlooked for whatever reason. You know, Hayden Sloyt's a classic example.
But this will stop that, though.
Well, I don't think it will, mate.
Really?
I don't think it never has. I mean, we've had lists who get shortened as it is, and players get games sometimes, I think, for, you know, just see what they've got, and they haven't earned the spot. You got to earn the spot. You earn the right. And we pension off far too many good players, I think, far too early as well. So there's a whole heap that you can throw into this conversation.
With the advent of the AFLW and the growth that we've seen, where do you see the waffle in 5 to 10 years?
Well, the waffle has always been under pressure from the AFL, who want it to be a 23s and under competition, because they don't want to have it as a mature age football competition. They've never wanted to tip any money into the WAFL for that reason, which is why the AFL only tips into development footy. But it's a good conversation to have, and hopefully you can join us and throw your 5 cents worth into the debate after this. 922-11882 is our number. This is
Welcome back to Sports Day, and it's nice to have your company on the program. The Matildas got their Olympic qualifiers off to a fly, didn't they, on the weekend? 7-0 victors over Chinese Taipei. Tonight, Hayes, they've rolled Thailand 6-0, so our girls dominating, haven't been scored against yet, with one game to come.
Emily Van Egmond with a hat-trick there, so good to see they're going so well. And there's been a boil over, Carl, in the
you predicted this
award,
the
Alan Border Medal. I did predict it. David Warner has claimed the Alan Border Medal by one vote ahead of Stephen Smith. So
really?
Patrick Cummins coming third, 9 votes adrift of David Warner. When you look back at his year, he did dominate the T20 Internationals. He was the Player of the Year in that format. The One Day Internationals, he was very good through the World Cup. He struggled throughout the Ashes, and that's going to be the big debate. The big tournament, you want to be at your best. He wasn't, but then he came back here to Australia and dominated the tests and got the votes.
Yeah, and when you think about the cross-format style that he is able to adapt really well to all formats, Cummins was probably disappointing with the bat, was really good with the ball, and that's why I thought, like you, off the top of our show, that he was most likely to win. And a little bit surprised that Smith got so close to the top. But anyway, 922-11882, do you agree? David Warner and Elise Perry, they've claimed the Alan Border Medal and the Belinda Clark Medal, respectively. Marnus Labuschagne, the Test Player of the Year. Aaron Finch was named the Men's One Day International Player of the Year. David Warner took out the T20 International Player of the Year. Alyssa Healy claimed the Women's One Day International Player of the Year. Sean Marsh took out the Men's Domestic Player of the Year Award. Wes Agar was rewarded with the Bradman Young Cricketer of the Year. Molly Strano won the Women's Domestic Player of the Year, and Taylor Vlasmink won the Betty Wilson Young Cricketer of the Year, and Corrine Hall won the Community Champion Award. So they have been held, conducted tonight on the East Coast, done and dusted with that. I'd be interested in your calls on 922 118 882 as to whether the right winners were rewarded there, as well as what we just spoke about with Paul Marsh, reducing list sizes, reducing game time, reducing the number of games. Another article written today, and I have read this a lot of times now, and certainly in the last few years, momentum has built for a 19th AFL team based in Tasmania. To me, it's a no-brainer. I think I spoke about this on last Thursday as to whether a team comes in from Tasmania. They deserve a team. There should have been a team, in my view, a long time before now, before we went into the Gold Coast and Greater Western Sydney, if we want to go right back to debates I put forward before. But if a new team comes into the competition at the start of the new broadcast rights deal, there is a chance then that the AFL makes a decision to play every team once rather than this mollycoddled issue that they've got with designing a fixture, which takes into top six, middle six, bottom six when they design the second number of games, Hayes. And by reducing the list size, because I think that these two things work hand in hand. You reduce the list size, it means that clubs pay less players, which means that as a collective bargaining agreement, there's pretty much with the reduction, say, of, what, 7 or 8 from each list, 18 clubs, 7 or 8 players come off. You're then going to have a new club come in with only 30 players. You're going to have 50 or 60 heads that you don't have to feed. So there's more money that goes into feeding those that are already engaged in the game.
Or does it? Or does the money that's left over go back to the big guns, the big names in the competition? And do you think that's it? Once you get to the 19th team, I just want you to crystal ball for me. Are there any more teams to come in at some stage in the AFL? Do you go to 20 teams and have 19 games and then have the big bonus where you have the West Coast Eagles and the Derby that's played and all the big matchups, the rivalry round is played as your 20th fixture?
Well, do we deserve another team in Western Australia, given that we've got this fantastic stadium, to utilise it more? Do you think that we can
handle... Where does that come from?
Do you think that we can handle another team in Western Australia? Do we send one north of the river?
I'd probably go south, personally. I'd probably go down towards Bunbury, southwest.
We've already got Freo, but what about heading north of our city? You don't think we could sustain another team?
I think you're just robbing Peter to pay Paul there. I think you're going to... West Coast might lose some of their members. I think Fremantle might lose some of theirs if you go down to the southwest. But if you do go to the southwest, I don't think it should be played here at Optus Stadium. It has to be played down in Bunbury, but there is no facility right at this point.
Are you giving more people, though, an opportunity to come along and experience the game? I mean, West Coast have already got 50-plus thousand members. Freo got 40-plus thousand members.
Talking 10 years down the track, and with the population growth, potentially, if both of those clubs were at a position in their time where they were close to the 60,000, then I guess you could look at it.
We just ran through the list of winners at the Australian 2020 Cricket Awards, and Daniel Cherney is a man who's been in the room. He works for The Age Sports, and he joins us here on Sports Day. Welcome, Dan. How are you, mate?
Good to be with you guys. Sorry, it took me a little while. Yeah, going well.
No, that's okay. You've been busy, and we understand, and we do thank you for your time. Were you surprised with the winner or not tonight?
Perhaps a touch, assuming you're referring to the AB medal, David Warner. Yeah,
yes.
A little bit. I suppose he had an outstanding year, since return, obviously, from suspension, with the exception of the Ashes, which is, I suppose, the marquee series of the year. So it's weird. It's sort of like, you know, and I heard you guys talking about footy a moment ago. It's like, you know, having a brilliant season, but maybe, you know, having a poor grand final or something like that. So he was excellent across certainly both white ball formats, at a brilliant home summer in Test cricket, a really strong World Cup. It's easy to forget. It was central to Australia's run to the semi-final and just did that poor Ashes series. Pat Cummins probably a touch stiff, having sort of been probably Australia's most consistent player across all three formats and sort of, you know, you just can't remember Pat Cummins playing a poor match. Steve Smith obviously didn't have a brilliant home summer, had a solid home summer, and obviously incredible Ashes. So I look in the end not hugely surprised, but maybe mildly surprised, I suppose.
Was there anything that unfolded in and around the awards tonight? Who stole the show when it came to the carpet walking into the room early in the night?
Yeah, well, it's funny. The event turned into a bit of a Marcus Stoner show. We might have seen a bit of him across Channel 7's coverage of the Big Bash doing roaming Stoin, and he's a guy with a lot of showmanship and charisma. He's a very friendly guy, and he was doing a lot of interviews in the pre-show. So he was probably the highlight there with a lot of funny little interviews. But obviously, a lot of people, very very well dressed for the occasion. So, but I think Stoinis was just about BOG.
And was there much talk around the game yesterday? I mean, we saw Elise Perry get a chance to bowl to Sachin Tendulkar. We saw young Litchfield get a chance out there in that game to raise money, which I think was around 7 or 8 million, wasn't it, in the end, Dan? It was a fantastic day yesterday, but good to see the girls recognised in the same way tonight, with Elise Perry running supreme with the Belinda Clark medal.
Yes, there was a bit of talk about that. They did talk to Elise about if there were any extra nerves when she was bowling the Sachin. But yeah, I mean, the Australian women all having actually had a few stutters just in the last week or so in this tri-series, but overall just a brilliant year. Wiping through most opponents, retaining the Ashes, and Elise Perry, a deserved winner. Elisa Healy won both the T20 and the one-day players of the year, so that's been pretty tight. I think Perry probably got home on the back of her strong one-off Ashes test performance in England last year, but I mean, there's just there are riches, so many so many great female players to choose from, and there's been several deserving winners, but it's pretty hard to go past those two, and obviously Elise has got the nod.
Thank you, mate. We'll read all that you have to report in The Age. Thanks for your time.
No worries. Have a good one.
Good on you. Daniel Cherney there from the Big Awards. Hey, Hayes, you know how we saw Elise Perry yesterday playing with Sachin, and then we saw young Litchfield out there batting, I think, with Brian Lara, who was a bloke that she grew up watching. And I know that you and I got a chance to face Mitchell Johnson, which is something that we'd probably never thought we'd do. And we also got our names up on the whacker, even though mine was in chalk. You had a properly prepared Hazelwood name that was spelled right.
Plenty of photos there. Tim Gossage, he loved that. He took a photo of that. What about his wicket-keeping as well? But it was a special weekend for that, wasn't it? The opportunity to share some time on the sporting field with your idol. And we just wonder, who would you love to share your time on the sporting field with? If you could choose one player from any era and you could turn back the clock, who would it be? We won't give ours just yet. We'll go to Kathy. She wants to talk about a team in Darwin. How are you, Kathy?
Not too bad. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I was listening earlier and you were talking about where we'd place the next AFL team. I was thinking Darwin, because then you could take advantage of the Indonesian market and possibly have players from Indonesia come across.
They're what do you reckon, Cal? You've always thrown up the Northern Territory and Darwin as an option. I'm not sure because of the population, but your reasons?
I just think they have contributed so much to the fabric of Australian football. We are always, every season, playing games in the Northern Territory market, whether that be in Darwin or at Alice Springs, mainly at the two venues. And, you know, I don't see why we shouldn't, given that, the Aboriginal population there, what they've done for the game, that they shouldn't have our own team to engage with the locals more. I know it's only a city of 150,000 people, but the Northern Territory is a little bit like Western Australia. It's got a fair bit of distance to service. I mean, when you think about the East Coast and how closely related, New South Wales and Victoria and Queensland, and on the West Coast, you travel from the same distance down at the bottom where South Australia is, right up to where you go to the top end. In Western Australia, you're going through four states and a territory on the East Coast. So I think that with Darwin and having a team there, a team that they could support and grow. I mean, at the moment, it's higgledy-piggledy because different teams come in there, which is great. They see the best players play a couple of times a year. there's a few teams that are repeat visitors, like Frio have gone there probably more often than West Coast. Melbourne have gone there probably more often than most of the Victorian clubs, and so have the Western Bulldogs, because they're the teams that get forced to travel because of their financial situation and status. But why shouldn't there be a team housed in the Northern Territory that all the local supporters, when they go down to the grounds, there's a reasonable... I mean, there'd be more fans go to the games in the Northern Territory that go to the Gold Coast and GWS still. So why not? Why don't they? If it's about people going through the turnstiles...
Well, it's not
there'd
really.
Be more
it's about
value.
Sustainability from a it's a financial
footy, it's
point
a footy
of view.
Territory too. So this is the other thing. Why don't we have teams in strong Australian rules football states and territories and going into these unproven markets, which are going to take a long time to shore up, in my view.
Because financially they make a lot of sense, if you get it right, and it's a big if with a few of them, I do understand that, but I think they would struggle to maintain a playing group that's going to be good enough to be competitive in the competition, and population growth will tell you that, and I agree with that with Tasmania as well. I think because people are more inclined to move out of those places and want to play footy in Melbourne or Sydney or over here in Perth or Adelaide, I just don't think they've got the population and the attraction to bring big players and keep them there, which means they would then have to give out more handouts and concessions to these clubs to keep players there, and then I don't think that's really achieving anything.
We'll have a quick chat to Stewie in Munster, but Hazen, I would love to know whether it's a court, a field, so it might be a tennis court, it might be a basketball court, it might be a football field, it might be a rugby pitch, it might be a soccer field, 922-1882. Who is the person that you would like to, your idol, would like to saddle up with, whether it be play alongside, maybe bowl to, face, 922-1882, shoot hoops with? Who is the person that you would most like to do that with on our number 922-1882? We'll take your calls after this here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals. And Lottery West. Celebrate like you've scored a century. Oz Lotto. Get amongst it this Tuesday. Play responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Plenty of calls to get to. Let's go. Stewie in Munster joins us first. G'day, Stu.
Yeah, g'day. How you going? Yeah, just wanted to get your opinion on Tim Cahill's decision today, or announcement today, that he's become an ambassador for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar.
Well, in what way? You don't like that he's become an ambassador for the 2020 World Cup in Qatar? What's your issue?
Yeah, I think it's a bad
or not?
Decision? Yeah, definitely.
Why?
I think it's tarnished with corruption, the 2022 decision.
Yeah, but...
To Qatar.
Yeah, I don't think that there'd be too many that would disagree with you on that basis, but Tim Cahill's basically joining for the betterment of the game, isn't he, rather than on the back of, say, some dodgy dealings that were done back then.
Yeah, it doesn't sit well with me at all. Being a big Tim Cahill fan, and being the two World Cups myself, was hoping that we were going to get the World Cup in Australia in 2022, and I guess that's why I'm a little bit bitter about it as well. So, but the fact that it was proved that it was corrupt, and yet they went ahead with it and were awarded the games. So,
Well, I'm trying to look beyond that, and I agree with you wholeheartedly in what you've expressed, and I would have hoped that, we could have played a better part if none of that happened, but in the end it isn't. I know that Tim's been a regular to Qatar over the years. He knows the country, knows the programs. He has, I think, when it comes to workers' welfare, amongst other things that have actually happened in Qatar, he is a great ambassador for it, and I think for all of those reasons, that's a lot of why he's doing it, and it's been announced today. But if you feel like, Stu, call in, 922-1882, as we go to Tony, who joined us. G'day, mate.
How you going, Carl? How you going, boys?
Yeah, we're good.
I'd like to, if I had the chance, I'd like to play with my old man. He used to play for Fitzroy. He used to play with Kevin Murray, Tony Ongarello, Jervis Haney, and all them blokes. If I had my time, he only played 7 games with...
So who was your dad? What was your dad's name?
Toby Elder. It'd be Daniel Noel Elder. But he's left us.
Yep.
And his brother, J John Elder played for Collingwood and South Melbourne, but I remember the old man and Kevin Murray sitting us in the backyard doing stab kicks at us, full-blown, every Sunday, and they'd hit you in the chest and they'd push you back to one metre at least. Like, just, yeah. But when you're talking who you'd like to play with, I would have loved to have had the time to play with my old man.
Righto, Tony. Good on you, mate. Thank you, mate. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Wayne. Hello, Wayne.
Yeah, good evening. How are we, guys?
Good.
I actually got two. One of them is batting with Sir Donald Bradman. And the other one is playing alongside Walter Lindrum in billiard snooker.
The billiards, yeah. Are you any good at it?
At pool, yes. Snooker, not so good. Billiards, no good at all. But I also don't play billiards. But I still would love to just be playing alongside him, just watching what he does and how he does it.
Well, I know Matthew Bolton well, who's a multiple champion in this country, and he struts his stuff on the world stage. So I could probably get you a hit against him if you want. I know he's not Walter Lindrum, but he's developing a record a little bit like Walter Lindrum's when it comes to those sports here in this country. So might be worth your while, Wayno, if you want to have a crack against someone. I'll tell you, he's stitched me up plenty of times over the years. So has his dad. Now, we will not give. You've got a minute, Richard. How are you, mate?
How you going, Carl and Paul? I've got a question about the Carambora medal. Why is it so favoured in the batsmen? I was just having a look at the history, because another batsman's won it tonight. If you don't take wickets, you cannot win games of cricket. So why is it weighted so far in the favour of the batsmen?
I think it's easier to make 100 than it is to probably get a fifer. And sometimes we talk about the fifer being the equivalent of 100, and if you get that, you're going to get votes in a lot of those awards. But unfortunately for Pat Cummins, where he's fallen down, I think he's taken twos and threes, some fours, where he's been very economical, but maybe hasn't got the top votes in a lot of those games that he's played in. But if you get a century, generally you're going to get the three votes.
And Pat Cummins won last year's medal, so he did.
There was two great players that were ineligible.
Exactly. We're going to clear a break. Back with more soon.
Welcome back to Sports Day, Macca's Summer of Sport update. Macca's mini games are here. Play and win every time. It's great to have Michelle Cowan, who is a very experienced lady, spent a lot of time coaching both AFL and now AFLW, been at Fremantle and now strutting her stuff at the West Coast Eagles. And we're going to review the whole of the action on the week. And before we jump into that, Michelle, seeing that you had rolled out on social media your big bruise that you sustained on Friday night in the charity cricket match, you okay?
I am sporting one. It's a bit of a trophy because I got it from Brad Hogg, so I'm pretty proud of that. But, what a great night it was, and raising over $60,000 with Boundaries for Bushfire. So it was, so much fun.
Did he give you much lip, Brad Hogg?
Yeah, we had a bit of banter. He bowled it, and it was an in-swinger, and it came in, and it bruised my thigh, and he said... I was like, oh, that really hurt. And he's like, well, that's for leaving Freo. Anyway, he bowled another ball and I hit that for four. And I said, that's for leaving the Scorchers.
Good stuff. Now, what did you think of West Coast? Let's start there, because obviously I thought the intensity early was unbelievable. I was texting Hayes. I said, if the Eagles keep up this sort of intensity, they're going to win the game all over Collingwood. Just couldn't score. And when you think of the inside 50 count, 22-23, the Eagles had their chances against the Pies on the weekend on their debut match.
Yeah, we certainly did. Pretty proud of that first quarter. The girls worked really hard, and you know, to travel away and be an expansion team and the first time ever playing together, I thought they just hit the ground running really well with some really hot pressure and high intensity and great use of the ball. But we know in AFLW that hitting the scoreboard's really important. If you get that scoreboard pressure early, it really does help. So a couple of missed opportunities there, but other than that, really proud of the way that they went about it. And we really walk away from the weekend really happy, with also some great learning outcomes for the group, which we'll look at this evening with our review and move on to the big game on the weekend, the Derby.
Omara Cameron is going to be a star. There's no doubt about that. But, Michelle, all of the expansion teams lost. Do you have any concerns in their first season that they could struggle at times?
Yeah, I don't. I understand that there's been a bit of commentary around that for round one. So they all have lost. But I think we'll see all of them just gain so much momentum and so much growth out of that round. And I don't think we'll see those expansion teams losing in the future and maybe even the near future with round two.
What about the Saints? What a crowd. Over 15,000 turned out to RSEA Park to watch their debut. They went down to the Western Bulldogs by 25 points, but it just shows you that the popularity, this game was played at Moorabbin, it's there, isn't it? People are going through the turnstiles. 5,500 people rocked up at Freo Oval yesterday.
Yeah, 42,000 for the entire AFLW competition. Maybe we can get that number at Optus Stadium on Saturday night as well. But, yeah, the St Kilda Army, they came out in force, but they have been in the lead-up as well with their practice matches and at training sessions. I've seen the, you know, they've certainly waited patiently for their women's team, and it's fantastic to see them support it and get along in numbers.
What about the next generation coming through? There's some exciting players. I believe Sabrina Duffy's the best forward in the competition because she knows how to find the goals. Four goals on the weekend. Another one is Maddie Prasparkas, who won the Rising Star last year. She was unbelievable. And I know also coming back at Collingwood, Chloe Malloy, the other one, they look like they're ready to take the competition by storm already.
Yeah, Maddie Prasparkas, unbelievably amazing. 21 touches on the weekend, one goal, and no doubt three votes as well. Rising star in 2019, and right now, I know it's only early days and round one, but she'd be knocking on the door for an AFLW best and fairest, potentially, the way that she plays, but has been playing since she was 4 years old. So she's just one of those players that just reads the play really well, runs in really good spots, but then has the ability to use the footy and just is a complete footballer.
There's some remarkable numbers across the weekend. I think we forget that the women's game is only just over half of the men's game. 14 tackles for Kiara Bowers, and also Anne Hatchard had 34 touches in that time. If you average that out over a men's game, you're looking at a 65 disposal match, which is unheard of.
Yeah, Anne Hatchard, that was incredible and breaks the record for the most touches in a game. But interesting, I thought that was going to be one of the games of the round, Brisbane-Adelaide. I thought Adelaide would come out and knock Brisbane off, but 34-21 sees Brisbane with a big upset there. But what we do know about Adelaide is they very often do lose that first game, and last year they lost to the Western Bulldogs in round one, but then went on to win every single game as well as the premiership. So I wouldn't be putting a line through their name after round one, that's for sure.
Michelle, there's a lot of good points out of the AFLW. The bad point for me is in growing markets. We see a game against Greater Western Sydney Giants and the Gold Coast Suns, and it's 9-8. How do we increase scoring? Have you got any ideas on how we increase the scoring? Because, you know, if we're going to grow the game in those parts of our markets in AFL, we need to be scoring a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I think that game, you know, it was a really, really testing conditions. Not sure if you caught it, but incredible amount of rain that came through, really windy conditions and a lot of contested ball there. But 9-8, I understand that. It's not the spectacle that we're looking for. I'd love to question whether 16-a-side is the right thing. Is it? Do we need more on the field in order to move the football and transition from defence to offence, and may that cause higher scoring. But yeah, I think we are seeing higher scoring. I'd probably like to have the conversation in round three or four, and I don't think we will be having the conversation because I think we'll see some consistent scoring and some higher scoring as well.
You were there when the Fremantle Dockers played in front of Collingwood. I think there was 42,000 that day. This weekend, it's the first Western Australian Derby. It's exciting. How many are you expecting, Michelle, and the girls ready to take on Fremantle, who looked very good, particularly their forward line?
Yeah, this is big. This is huge, not only for both footy clubs, but just for WA sport as well. I think I've got about 5,000 people I know coming along. So hopefully we get close to the 6,000 or even beat that record of 42,981. I remember that clearly because it was a great day. when Fremantle won by 13 points. But look, this is a historic occasion, and I really hope the WA community really rallies and gets behind it, and therefore they'll be part of history going to the first ever derby game for AFLW. But yeah, you know, Fremantle coming off a really good win there against Geelong, and I agree, Hayes. I thought Sabrina Duffy was outstanding, and she really can find the goals, and is such a smart and clever footballer.
Thank you, Michelle. Take care. We'll have a chat to you next Monday.
Wonderful. Thanks, guys.
Michelle Cowan there. Just remember, coaches back-to-back tomorrow. Trent Cooper and Luke Dwyer will join us just after 7 o'clock here on Sports Day, and they will throughout the course of the AFLW season. Great to have the two coaches on board. And get on board for this game. 25,000 tickets were sold at the end of last week, so I'm not sure how many more were bought today. I know that I bought a few, so they're only $3. It includes public transport. The money is going to the Bushfire Relief Fund, and there's a field club as well. There's a joint function between West Coast and Freo, so the two clubs are coming together. It's $65 per head. There will be hospitality available where you get your food on arrival, and at halftime there's a cash bar, and what you'll get is the teams running through the field club as they go out onto the ground. Eagleshospitality.com.au if you'd like to head along to that function, and Ticketmaster is where you're guided by your ticket. So we want whole of Perth to get behind it and pack the stadium out, and let's make it 60,000 and not a seat left in the house.
I'll be there, Carl. I thought it was a very good weekend for the AFLW. I've got my concerns around the goal king. I think that's where the issue is. I think clubs are getting their opportunity. It's an accuracy thing. I think you've got a whole bunch of girls that have grown up not practicing that goal king element. And when you look at Gemma Houghton, that's a good example. 1-3. She struggles when she kicks for goal. She always has. I used to coach her, but it's going to take time for that to improve. I've got a left field idea. You're probably going to shut me down on this one again. What if we widen just the goals? So you just put each goalpost out 1 metre. Would that have the desired effect where you increase the scoring, because they're just not quite there with their accuracy just yet?
No, I don't know that it would work, but I wonder what you think on 922-1882. Love to have your input on that one. And we are also broadcasting this game too, this historic match here on 882 6PR. I'll be in the commentary box looking forward to singing my teeth into that on Saturday night. For Maccas, the mini games are here. Play and win daily food prizes only on the My Maccas app. More of your calls up. Now, while we go to the calls on 922-1882, if you'd like to join in tonight, you can do that now. We've got our Automasters quiz. The prize, a $150 Automasters voucher. Great service guaranteed. Call 1-300-AUTOMASTERS. If you'd like to win the voucher, you need to call through now on 922-1882. We'll start with caller number 4. So caller number 4 will get a crack first, and then we will roll through those of you that take the time to get involved. We've got 3 questions. It is last person standing wins, and while you're calling through, we go to Alex in North Lake. G'day, Alex.
G'day, guys. I'd just like to have my two bobs worth regarding the suggestion to have a shorter season with fewer games being played.
With
currently,
the AFL?
The West Coast will be playing, and the Dockers will be playing 23 games at Optus Stadium. And Optus Stadium is a big investment by the stadium, and they've got Venues Live running it for them, who obviously are there to generate a return back to the government to get the return on capital on the $1.5 billion that they invested.
So what about another team? What about another team?
Well, that's a possibility.
Mm.
But it's also highly unlikely as well. But in the meantime, if you're going to have four less games, that's, you know, lots of millions of dollars that is going to be foregone by someone.
Yeah, I agree with those comments. And heading towards the next collective bargaining agreement, Carl, do you think we're headed towards the same sort of money from that, or do you think it's going to be less? I get the feeling it could be less.
Well, there may well be less. I mean, it depends on the financial landscape that we've got in this country and with competitors. I mean, there's only so much money that goes round. We're not going into the international markets, although we are making forays into China, and there's talk of going into the US, and depends how much money is associated with that and how much we can generate income-wise out of that move. For me, look, Alex, I enjoy a 22-round season. I think that that can continue. But if they're talking about bringing in two new teams, one in Tasmania, where does the other one go if they're going to go to 20 teams? If they do that, do you get to the point where you do only play each team once? Because once you get to the number of teams, if you've got out to 21 or 22 teams, then all of a sudden there's probably only enough rounds to play to each team once.
I like the rivalry round idea though. Like you want two Western Derbies, you want the blockbuster games to be played twice.
So therefore, if we get to 20 teams, you just break it in half. You have two lots of 10, and you play all of that, and everyone plays home and away in one season. Except you have two conferences, which is what they'll do in other sports in other markets. Now it's whether you like that. I don't really like that personally. I like to see it all together, but. If you start it, keep increasing the game and keep increasing the number of teams, then those opportunities to play home and away properly gets pushed out the window. 9222 is a number if you'd like to get involved. Alex, are you still there?
Yeah, I am.
What do you think about Hayes' idea of widening the goals?
No, don't.
In the girls' game.
Wouldn't support it. My suggestion would be to have the umpires pay free kicks when they're there, because currently, when I've watched the women's games, they seem to be just rolling rugby mauls. They're just stacks on the mill, and it slows the game right down. Whereas if you open it up with a quick free kick, it gets the ball moving, and it gets into the forward line quicker and scores a quicker as well.
You know what? You make a good point here. I mean, I've always felt that if you are holding the ball and you're on the ground, say in rugby union, what happens when you go to ground with the ball in your hands? If you're not on your feet, you got to roll away. You got to release the ball. Yeah. So if you're holding onto the ball, there's a penalty against you. I'd like to see that, you know, in the girls' game. I'd like to see it in the AFL as well, because we've got a lot more congestion in the AFL now than what we've ever had before too, in my view, and it makes it difficult for the umpires. But if you go to ground and you're holding the footy and you don't then release the ball, and a bloke then comes in on his feet who can pick it up and keep the ball moving, I reckon that would clean up the game a hell of a lot, and it would force people to try and stay on their feet rather than falling over, because when you fall over, you're out of play. So I don't know whether we can do something along those
lines. I reckon
they're
hotter on the trigger with the holding the ball rule, though, in the AFLW. I think they called it a lot faster than they would in the men's in regards to exactly what you're talking about, to try and keep the game moving. And they've also implemented the boundary throw-ins that have come in 10 to 15 metres closer to the middle to try and open up the game and get the ball moving. But the key component of that is the skill level. As that improves, I think the ball movement will improve. I think they'll get deeper and further inside the forward 50. I think in 5 years' time, a lot of the girls inside the forward 50 will be able to kick from 40 metres. Right now, I reckon there's only one or two that can kick from outside 35, and that's one of the issues with their goal kicking, is a few are dropping short whenever they get a shot inside the forward 50.
Did I tell you what I thought of your widening the goalposts idea for the girls' game?
Loved it.
Bum bum.
Bum bum.
I don't think I need to say any more.
Well, give me a suggestion.
It's a dumb idea.
You need to come up with something.
You can't just start to move the fabric of the game. And, you know, like, you're talking about all levels of the girls' game have got the same as what the men have got. Don't start buggering.
It's not the same, though.
It is the same.
Boundary throw-ins, last touch.
Come on.
Out of bounds. See, there is changes, mate.
We're talking about
the
width of the goals, and a lot of the girls, like, you can't say at Optus Oval, oh, well, we'll move the goals out a metre for the men. The goals are set in place, mate. It's too hard to go and move the goalposts. I mean, if you've got movable ones at community grounds, then, you know,
it does become an issue at community grounds. But all the AFL clubs could cater for it.
Yeah, I don't think they need to. There's things that I think that they can do to improve it rather than doing that. Let's go. I haven't got time to talk about it now, because I'm going to talk to Ken in Stratton. If you'd like to get in the queue for the quiz, because if Ken gets rolled here, it'll be over to you. Automasters quiz. Switch and save on your next Automasters service with over 40 branches. You call 1-300-AUTOMASTERS. G'day, Ken.
G'day, guys. I might get rolled pretty quick then.
Righto. Well, let's see how you go. 9221882. That is our number. Ken in Stratton. Hayes has the first question for you.
Question one. Who won the Victorian Open Golf yesterday?
The brother or the sister, you? I can't think of his name.
Well, we need his name because you're not...
Let's go to...
Jason, who joined... Jace, do you want to have a crack at the quiz first before you ask your AFLW question?
Not really, Carl.
Oh, you don't have to. All right. Will you tell us why? Okay.
Well, all right. I'll have a crack at the quiz, but, you know.
Are you sure? Because we can have a chat. Now, we'll have a chat to you. Well, let's talk to you first about your issue. 922-982 if you know the answer to Hayes's question. Who won the Victorian Golf Open yesterday? 922-982 if you know that.
I know that.
Well, go on then. Give us an answer.
It's something Ming Lee. I did watch a couple of the holes as he was coming down. Actually, mm-hmm. I've got a story about that. He came up short on a par four, as in had to pull it in short. He couldn't attack the hole. Mm-hmm. And so he shot it. It was a 314-metre par four. He shot it 300 metres. You know what he mm-hmm. used?
What?
A four iron.
Yeah, mate, unbelievable how far he hits the ball. We're going to have a chat to Mark Hayes in a little while. AFLW Fabric of the Game, what do you want to talk about?
Well, if Hayes wants to move goals, I've always sort of thought that it should be, allowed to be a goal like all other sports if you touch it or it skims the inside of the post. And the main reason for that is, well, A, we've got a review system that's controversial and it's not working, and that's about the ball going through whether it's touched or whether it skims the inside of the post. Mm-hmm. And also the guys, the defenders are all coming through and punching. If it lands in a box, they're all punching through. Now, if you change the rules where they punch it through, they have to be very careful about where they punch it.
Yeah,
so they're allowed to punch it through the point.
It would be exciting. Also, if it hits the post, well, if it came back
sport,
in,
isn't it?
Play on.
Yeah.
Well, soccer, hockey, any NFL, rugby, it skims the post, it goes through.
It's a goal.
It's a goal.
Yep. Good on you, Jase. Thanks for your call.
We've got a problem. Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you, mate. Adam in Thornley, g'day.
Oh, how are you?
Yeah, well, mate. So what's the answer?
I thought the next guy was actually going to answer it.
So the golfer? Yeah, do you know the golfer's name?
No, sorry, I'm out. Sorry.
Oh, Josh in Mozzie Park. G'day, Josh.
Hey, Ming Wei Lee.
Correct.
Okay, question two, great service guarantee, call 1300 Automasters Hayes.
Who was named man of the match in the Big Bash final on Saturday night? He is from WA. His name is?
Oh, the Big Bash final in WA. Oh, it was Philippi.
Yes!
Josh Philippi scored 52 off 29 balls.
Switch
and the last
save
question.
And your Automasters service with over 40 branches, call 1300 Automasters. Come on, Josh.
Is who won last year's Alan Border medal?
Last year's Alan Border medal, it was the bowler, Cummings.
Yes! Good boy.
Well done. Voucher coming your way.
Yeah, stay there, mate. We need to get your details.
Yes.
I think you said Cummings, but Cummings, I think you said,
I did it
you said
earlier.
Cummings earlier.
Not easy.
So you agree, you two agree that it's Cummins. Pat Cummins was the one tonight. It was won by David Warner, for those of you that didn't catch up with it earlier. Hey, Hayes, we're going to Jason Johannesson. Some news from other clubs in the AFL today. Sad news, really. Tom Bellchambers and Stephen May succumbing to injury.
Yeah, both look like they've got time on the sidelines. A setback on the knee that Stephen May had surgery on in January, a bit of fluid in there, and Tom Bellchambers is a big one. They did recruit Andrew Phillips, who can come across and play that role. But Bryn Teagle, the Northampton boy, also from East Fremantle, 203 centimetres ruckman, he has gone there last week to work into that spot if it is available. So big news story there. Let's watch with interest with the Bombers.
Now, your dig earlier tonight was around the NBL and the delays. Now, this one from Kim, who sent me an email here, says the major reason for the delay to the start of the Wildcats Bullets game would have been because of the overtime in the Phoenix Kings game before it. They only have one main commentator and two special commentators rostered on in the commentary studio in Melbourne, so the second game would have to wait. So that means that they're doing it from a central location. They've got a world feed coming into that studio, which means that the commentators can't switch from one screen to the next until the first game is over, so everyone has to wait. If you actually went back to calling games live from an actual venue, which makes it a lot easier to see, I know it would probably cost a little bit more money, but for the listener out there in the audience, it would overcome a lot of other issues. Anyway, that's something to talk about later. Jason Johannesson to join us next. Welcome back to Sports Day and a sport update for Barron O'Day, because the little things are everything, and we're joined by new dad Jason Johannesson. Jace, welcome, mate. How are you, buddy?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Now, how old is Junior now?
Yeah, she's 3 months old. So, yeah, everything's going really well. And The main thing is she is sleeping well, so which is nice.
Yeah. How much has life changed, though, mate? Because Hayes and I have been through this, and how's your experience been so far?
Yeah, it's been good. Like, I'm really enjoying it and loving it. You know, you just become so obsessed with them and just catch yourself just staring at her. And, yeah, it's been so cool. But some things, like trying to take the missus out to go to the movies is a bit tough. We can find some babysitters. But, yeah, no, we have some good support, so which is nice.
Good stuff, mate. Now, on to business. How has the pre-season been for you?
Yeah, really good. Obviously, last year I had no pre-season off the back of hip surgery and an ankle injury, and this year haven't missed any training sessions. So, you know, it's gone really well, and I feel like I'm improving in areas that I want to, and, yeah, looking forward to the season to start.
What about for the team? Because the expectations go up this year, given what we saw at the back end of last year. Champion data rankings came out today, and they've got the Western Bulldogs number 2. So that was interesting. But everybody I speak to, listen to, they believe the Western Bulldogs are certainties to play finals. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, I don't know how much you can read into champion data, but we certainly don't. But, yeah, obviously it was nice to, you know, finish the year off really well in the back half of the season last year, and to make finals. And obviously we didn't perform the way we wanted to in the elimination final, but the boys are, you know, they're really hungry. Obviously we had a couple of new additions to the team, and the main thing is that on track we're pretty healthy. We've pretty much got a full squad, so the standard of training's been really good, and competitions for spots is going to you know, lift the standard for us. So we're just looking forward to the season.
Two very good recruits, Alex Keith down back and also Josh Bruce. We know he can kick a bag of goals. How have they fitted into the side so far, and are they both ready and available?
Yeah, so obviously Joshy came across in St Kilda. He hasn't missed a beat. He's trained every session. And Keithy, unfortunately, had a bit of an injury coming into the pre-season, so he's been in rehab, but he's in the main group now. And just playing match simulation with them both, and you know, just their experience and maturity is going to definitely help a bit of a younger team that we have. And you know, they're pretty pumped to be in the new colours, and yeah, we can't wait for round one.
Now, you're one of a few WA boys in your team. I want to know about the two big fellas, Aaron Norton, who went forward and shone, and Timmy English, who is just growing into that body at 205 centimetres. He's 22. Aaron Norton's 20 years of age, and they both look like they can have long careers in this game.
Yeah, they have both have the potential to be absolute superstars of the game. And obviously, you saw what Aaron Norton can produce in some big games last year with his aerial ability. But what's really goes well with him is his ability on the ground level. He's got a bit of speed and agility, and you know, he puts the pressure on as well. So he's not a one-trick pony. And Timmy English is continuing to develop his body, getting stronger, and you know, his work around in the ruck's improving. And just his ability to use the ball as such a tall man is going to stand out for us. So both boys going to look forward to having big years.
What about Josh Shackey? How's he tracking, mate? Because he's one that probably hasn't reached the early potential that was probably put on him when he got his opportunity in the competition, and he come from another club to yours. Are we expecting to see more impact from him in 2020?
Yeah, I think so, especially with Joshy Bruce coming over. And, you know, we might play a three-tall forward line, and which might give Josh a bit of a chop out and get a smaller defender and have a bit of a mismatch. But I think from Joshy, we're just looking for some consistency. You know, he played a couple of good games here and there, and maybe not so good. But I think the work he's doing this preseason is just becoming a consistent player, just competing for the whole four quarters.
Jason, given your run and dash, you've been a marked man in the back line for a long time for opposition teams. But how did it change last year with Caleb Daniel coming in, moving to the back line, and his ball use off the back line is the best in the competition that I've seen? Did it change a little bit for you and free you up a little bit more?
Yeah, definitely, especially with Matt Sockin in the back line as well. I think, you know, if opposition's put time into one of us, I think that can we can still have the ability to open up the game with the other two. So, you know, opposition's going to have to either pick one or maybe not go with either. And, yeah, especially Caleb Daniel, his ability to change the angles of the football and, you know, give us some drive from the back end, I think it's going to be one of our strengths this year.
I've seen a few journalists have a crack at the All-Stars team, and your name has been included in a few. Are you likely to line up against Victoria for the All-Stars?
For the All-Stars? Yeah, well, I've definitely put my hand up, and, you know, it's probably not up to me to select the side, but I would love the opportunity to play in such a big game and also obviously for a great cause as well. So, yeah, if I do get the opportunity, it'd be an awesome experience.
Thanks very much for your time, mate. Appreciate it. Good on you. Take care.
You too. Thanks.
Jason Johannesson there, and don't forget, you can live a little larger at Crown this summer. Now, Mark Hayes from Golf Australia will join us next. Be nice to have a chat to him about Min-Woo Lee, who has pocketed over $183,000 in winning the Victorian Golf Open on the weekend. This summer, Crown is the only destination where things are a little bigger, brighter and more fun. Mark Hayes next, and John Slavich not too far away for Green to Green. Welcome back to Sports Day, and it is our Green to Green for Barrow Day, because the little things are everything, and Mark Hayes joins us from Golf Australia. What a weekend it's been for West Australian Min-Woo Lee. Welcome, Hazy. How are you, buddy?
G'day, boys. I'm pumped. I've been waiting to have this conversation with you guys for ages. I thought it was coming. I wasn't sure when, but it's here, and I get to talk up Min-Woo Lee, and I couldn't be happier.
Now, how come you are the number one ticket holder in his fan club? Why are you so excited about this kid?
I just love him. He's a great young fella. I fell in love with his golf probably 5 years ago, and I think he definitely owns the best shot I've ever seen live in golf, the one, and that's saying something, I think. Mm. But it's his whole package. It's the distance, it's the hands, it's the imagination, but more importantly, he's a good kid off the course and has barely changed in that time, despite obvious chances to do so and being engulfed in publicity, etc. He's just a ripping young man and very humble and loves the family and all that sort of stuff. So I'm happily bragging about being on him for a few years. So, you know, I'm thrilled that he gets an opportunity now to basically plot his course around world golf for the next couple of years with a European Tour card.
So what does it mean? He's obviously continues on the European Tour card opportunity, but for the PGA and his world ranking, how long do you think it'll take him to get on the big tour?
So, I mean, many in the European Tour will argue that he's already there, but I think long-term he's always had his eye on North America. What this has done, aside from the obvious cash, it does bump him up immediately to sort of number 11 on the Race to Dubai and European Tour rankings. It's up to a number 120-odd, 127 maybe, in the world rankings, and that's where he's going to get his big advantage. By now, he'll be able to enter tournaments that he sees fit. There'll be stronger fields. If he can make his way through those, he'll get more world ranking points. And once he gets into the top 75 or 50 or 40 or higher, if we dare to dream, that's when all the doors start opening up for the major championships, and he'll be able to then pick and choose, because I'm sure once he gets there, he'll hold his own. So if he can do that, then he'll be able to basically play on any tour in the world. So he's got a fair bit going on. But he's now got the time to pick and choose a path through it. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's only 21 years of age. It was nice to see his sister, Min-Gee Lee, embrace him after he sank that last putt on the 18th hole. And he earned $183,000 in the process, and he'd been borrowing his sister's car when he came back home, so he's now got some money to buy one, he said.
Oh, they're pretty close, so they're not often home at the same time. But yeah, I reckon he can probably afford a couple of Ubers, or maybe drop down and pick up a Mercedes or something. I don't know. He's got the cash now. To be honest, while it sounds a massive amount of money, it's pittance compared to what he can earn now with that European Tour card. So the best thing about that is, they've set a record. Clearly, there aren't many tournaments where there are both men and women playing, but to have brother and sister basically on the same title is unheralded. That she was there to see it was special. They had a bit of a side bet going. He didn't reveal details, but he was not only pumped to win, but he was very happy to get the better of his sister to take home and have bragging rights. So he reckons he's going to hang on to them for a while. So we'll hopefully get Minji a title this week in at Royal Adelaide in the Women's Australian Open, and then we'll see where it goes from there in the family department.
Well, she has two titles at that tournament. Now, what's been the feedback around the tournament and the use of the men's and the women's combined? It seems pretty good from the outside.
Yeah, it really is. Sometimes we can cop a bit of stick at Golf Australia because, you know, we talk it up or whatever, but 5 or 6 years we've had this tournament. Every year it gets rave reviews. We have so much more international interaction. The feedback on social media and stuff comes from around the world, and both Kari Webb and Jeff Ogilvy spoke so glowingly of it at press conferences during the week, and it really has traction. When they speak, the golf world listens, and I know that several tournaments are thinking about it and trying a variation of the concept, but it's clearly still the most innovative golf tournament in the world. We're extremely proud of it, and especially the women's field. It's so deep and so strong. For them to come down and throw their support behind something that just makes sense, is I think it's really important for sport in Australia, let alone golf.
Now, speaking of young blokes doing the job, and this was a maiden victory for Nick Tarter, who went wire to wire at Pebble Beach, and his wife, who was working full-time, was doing a shift in hospital. So nice little story there, only in his fourth tournament.
Yeah, he's done really well. Nick Tarter, I mean, he's unheralded. It's always good to see unheralded players do well, especially I personally like to see the international players like that do so well on the American soil. To me, though, it's sort of a bit of a warning that maybe the big guns weren't out there at full capacity, if that makes sense. I think they're probably eyeing something down the track, the Players' Championship in March or the Masters in April before they really get cracking. So reserve judgment on him a little bit, but it is a really nice feel-good story for Taylor.
Good result for a few Aussies. Jason Day fourth. He gave it away late, and Matt Jones tied for fifth.
Yeah, no, really nice result for both. That's the second time in 3 weeks that Jason Day's bobbed up. I do rate the Torrey Pines tournament where he was close a couple of weeks ago a bit higher. So it's good to see. Hopefully his back will stand the rigours of the bigger events, as I said, the Masters and the Players coming up. But it is nice to see him making positive strides towards being fit, if nothing else. And Matt Jones capping off the form that he showed to win his second Australian Open in December. I'm not surprised he's hit the ground running there, so that's a good result for him as well.
And where do we find you tonight? What's coming up next?
Oh, boys, I've moved from 13th Beach in Victoria across. I'm on my way towards you guys. It's just that magnetic pull you guys have. I'm on my way. I'm at Royal Adelaide. So Women's Australian Open week this week. Undoubtedly the best field in Australian golf we have annually. Sometimes we have a President's Cup that usurps it, but this field is so powerfully strong. All the women who are already awesome in Victoria, add Lydia Ko, add Nellie Korda, add about a handful of others as well, and we've got just a fantastic field. The Royal Adelaide setup is unbelievable. I'm reluctant to sort of say this on air, but I just want to, it's so beautiful out there. I just sort of want to rip the shirt off and just roll around in the grass. It's
well,
the
can.
Best course I've seen for quite a while.
You probably did that when Min Woo won, did you?
Send us a couple of selfies while you're doing it, will you? Come on. I dare you.
I think that I'll have a crack at it for you, but I think the ticket price might tumble if I do that.
Can Hannah Green or Minji Lee get it done?
Yeah, they're flying the flag for Australia, as you know, perhaps along with Suo and a couple of others, but really high hopes for them both. Hannah also fought really well through the field without firing much of a shot on the first 2 days. She was much better in the high winds the last 2 days at 13th Beach, and I think she comes here. This is the beauty of Hannah Green. She rates this tournament more highly in her want-to-do list than major championships. It means that much to her to win the national crown, so if she's about and Minji's about on Sunday afternoon, I'm certain we're going to have a cracking tournament here too.
Thank you, mate. Thanks very much for your time, and we'll have a chat to you or one of your team on Wednesday as we lead into that tournament. Thanks for your time, Mark Hayes.
Thanks, fellas.
Mark Hayes there for Barron O'Day's Green to Green. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Come back with John Slavich here on Sport. We finish off tonight with Barron O'Day's Green to Green because the little things are everything. And joining us to update all of the bowls action that has happened around the state is John Slavich. Welcome, John. How are you?
Yeah, good evening, guys. Going well, thank you.
Were you a winner in round 12 of the Premier League action?
Yes, Doubleview were lucky enough to get over the line against Mosman Park.
7-1 victory, 82-49, so great win there by W. Set up by Kyle McElroy's rink, who had a 26-10 win over Dale Marsland. Baffin Dean, who have been leading the competition for majority part of the season, are starting to slip away, and unfortunately they were home ground losers to Manning, 93-70. Manning taking out the 7-1 victory there. North Beach couldn't quite contain South Perth. South Perth running away with an 85-60, 7-1 win there. Glenn Pauling was a 24-10 win over Brad Gillingham. Cardinia got the chocolates in a close one against Cambridge with a 6-2 victory, 69-67. And Aussie Park had a good win against Warmbra, 71-70. They got 7 points, close aggregate there with Gary Caffell, a 6-shot winner. So W still holding on to top of the ladder, 69 points. South Perth hot behind with 67. Manning and Bassendine rounding out the top four.
Johnny, what about the Australian Jackaroos side? It was announced for the 2020 World Bowls Championship. Who is in it?
Yes, Bowls Australia selectors have confirmed the 10-strong contingent to charge with the nation's hopes of the home soil on the 2020 World Bowls Championships. There'll be 36 nations playing to take part in a 14-day event from Tuesday the 26th to Sunday the 7th of June across Broadbeach, Helensvale and Musgrove Hill bowling clubs on the Gold Coast. The BCI Australian Jackaroos will be led by a host of familiar names, plus we have 3 new debutants for this event. Ellen Ryan, Corey Wedlock and Aaron Tees will make their World Bowls debut. Australia will be hoping to better their haul of the 5 gold medals from 8 disciplines from their last time the event was held down under, and that was in 2012 at the Adelaide Bowling Club. The Jackaroos were also the best performed team of the most recent 2016 event in New Zealand with 4 gold, 2 silver and a bronze for the 8 disciplines. So in the ladies, Kelsey Cottrell will be holding out the singles. She'll partner Lindsay Clark in the pairs. Ellen Ryan will be playing with Natasha Scott and Rebecca Van Ash in the triples. And then Ellen Ryan, Lindsay Clark, Rebecca Van Ash and Natasha Scott taking out the fours. Now with the men's, we have Aaron Wilson, who was a Commonwealth Games gold medalist, holding his spot there on the singles. He'll be pairing with Corey Wedlock in the pairs. The triples will be Barry Lester, Aaron Tees and Aaron Sheriff, and the fours will be Corey Wedlock, Barry Lester, Aaron Tees and Aaron Sheriff.
Now, give me the day one results of the W Masters pairs.
Yes, look, the 6 sections went out. There was 24 teams out there, a very high-quality field. There are a few upsets along the way, which you would expect in a field so strong. And in Section 1, Lindsay Thorne and Brad White took out that section quite easily in the end. Joe Rolnick and Carl Vanderslide in Section 2. Mark Vitale, Paul Kelly, Section 3. A young state pairing, some up-and-comers, Connor Biddle and Matthew Whiteley took out Section 4. Paul Davies, Mark Abernall, Section 5. Bill Brasman and Chris Lander win Section 6 winners. So we continue on to next Sunday, the 16th of February, where the next grouping of players and teams will be out there. So if anyone would like to get down to the W Bowling Club, check out the wonderful facilities, some great bowls, some big names being out there in this last group of players, and a TAB, a one-place shop, is the W Bowling Club.
Thank you, mate. Good on you. Nice to have you on the program. Take care. We'll have a chat to you next Monday.
Thanks, guys. Take care, and everyone, happy bowling.
Good on you. John Slavich there for Green to Green, and thanks to Barra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Speaking of little things growing into big things, he's got his wings, Min Woo Lee. We spoke about him tonight with Mark Hayes. He will join us tomorrow on the program. We'll have our AFLW coaches back-to-back just after 7 o'clock. Trevor Gleeson will also join us. Looking forward to your company from 6 o'clock tomorrow as we discuss another busy day in sport. After the news that's coming up next, it'll be Chris Ilsley with Perth Tonight.